Vasudevayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, Text 16. Translation. Government men are always like carnivorous demons called rakshasas or man-eaters. Sometimes these government men turn against the conditioned soul and take away all his accumulated wealth. Being bereft of his life's reserved wealth, the conditioned soul loses all enthusiasm. Indeed, it is as though he loses his life. Please repeat. Government men are always like carnivorous demons called rakshasas or man-eaters. Sometimes these government men turn against the conditioned soul and take away all his accumulated wealth. Being bereft of his life's reserved wealth, the conditioned soul loses all enthusiasm. Indeed, it is as though he loses his life. Excuse me. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The word Rajakula Rakshasa is very significant. Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled about 5,000 years ago. Yet government men are referred to as rakshasas or carnivorous demons. If government men are opposed to a person, that person will be bereft of all his riches, which he has accumulated with great care over a long period of time. Actually, no one wants to pay income taxes. Even government men themselves try to avoid these taxes. But at unfavorable times, income taxes are exacted forcibly, and the taxpayers become very morose. Omagyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. And I beg for the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, that I may be able to speak something or say something that will be beneficial for everyone. Repeating the translation. Government men are always like carnivorous demons called rakshasas or man-eaters. Sometimes these government men turn against the conditioned soul and take away all his accumulated wealth. Being bereft of his life's reserved wealth, the conditioned soul loses all enthusiasm. Indeed, it is as though he loses his life. Here we have a very interesting and pertinent example of what is going on today, just as it was thousands of years ago. When government officers or leaders become incapable of managing the economy of a city or a state or a community, then what they do is they obtain the monies by often unjustly taxing the citizens. And so the citizens continue to pay more and more to the government, and quite often, although not always, but quite often, the government not only uses some of the money for the welfare of the citizens, such as to build roads, communication systems, police departments, armies, sanitation departments, waterworks, and so forth. So some of these projects get done. And then there are areas, of course, which are neglected. So many people pay taxes, even though they may not get so much benefit from the government. And quite often, it is the poor or the common person or the ordinary person who is taxed to the max, as high as they get, as much honey as the government can squeeze out of them, that's what they will do. And quite often, many of the wealthy persons, because there are loopholes in the laws, can completely escape having to pay any taxes. There are, for example, many wealthy people place their savings in tax-free bonds or municipal bonds, which pay far higher than the banks. For example, today, municipal bonds may be paying 4.5% to 5%, whereas the banks are paying 0.5% to 1.5%. And the interest that a person gets from these municipal bonds is tax-free. Doesn't have to pay any money to the taxes. So if a person is a multi-millionaire, has $50 million, and he puts it into tax-free bonds, and he's getting 5% on that, he doesn't have to pay taxes on that. The government excuses him. And that's because when you buy bonds from municipalities, it goes to help to pay for some of the services of those municipalities, and then those municipalities have to ask for less money from the federal government. So the result is that many people pay virtually no taxes, and many people who can least afford them have to pay lots of taxes. And they can hardly do anything about it, because that's just the way it's been going on, as we can see, 5,000 years ago. When the taxes become too great for the people in general, what often happens is they organize and they begin to rebel. And such rebellions often result in the deposing of leaders and the destruction of the present government. For example, we had in France. That's exactly what was happening earlier in France. The people were being taxed, just as I mentioned, and they rebelled, and they finally got so strong and so large that they were able to even get the sympathies of the soldiers, the armed forces. And what they did is they rounded up all the aristocrats, they put them in a big jail, and then one by one they brought them out and they put them to the guillotine, chopped their head off. And they were chopping by the thousands, one after another. I mean, there were so many heads, they didn't know what to do with them. Every day, hundreds of heads were chopped. So this was the way that the people in general were avenging themselves for the steep or the high taxes that they had to pay, and the miseries, the difficulties that they had to undergo as a result of this unfair taxation. And similarly, what happened in this country, people were being taxed for paying for goods that were coming from Great Britain and not getting any representation, not getting any benefit from paying those taxes. None, because all the benefit was going to Great Britain. So it was called taxation without representation. We all heard that. And so nobody had representation. Nobody could say anything. And it was like a dictatorship. So, of course, people organized, they rebelled, and so we now have the United States. That's what happens. People do rebel because they are sick and tired of being squeezed and squashed to the max in order to have to pay tax. So the question really comes is, why would a government do this? What is their reason for doing this? They know that it's going to create upset and disturbance to the people in general. They know this. But they feel they're so powerful. They're so great. They have the army. They have the gunpowder. They have the weapons that they can put down any rebellion or revolution. Who can challenge the aristocracy? Who can challenge the soldiers who are paid by the aristocracy? So the aristocracy, as well as the military, they become very, very puffed up, very proud that they can go on doing this forever and ever. Because after all, we've got the strength and the power, and the people have to depend upon us. Until the people become stronger and stronger, and they depose or they annihilate the present guard. So it's this pride which causes people, and this desire to want to hoard for oneself at the expense of other human beings' suffering. In other words, they don't care about somebody else's suffering. The only person who cares about is, number one, myself. And they all band together, and they figure that this can go on, as I said, ad infinitum, year after year, and it will continue to go on. And this is the big illusion. A person who is proud will be in big illusion because he doesn't see things with the proper perspective. He doesn't see things correctly. He sees things only in terms of his own power, which he believes is invincible, until he's destroyed or defeated. So what is the cause? Why do they do this? They do this because of the very basic problem that each and every one of us, not only aristocrats, but the poor as well, have. And that is the problem that each and every one of us wants to lord it over, wants to be a lord over this material world, a lord over people, a lord over animals, a lord over land, a lord over roadways, a lord over technology, basically a lord over material nature. This is what living entity wants to do. And this is the result of a problem that he has, an age-old problem. Originally, we were all in the spiritual world. We were serving Krishna. But for some reason or other, we no longer wanted to use our independence in loving service to Krishna, but wanted to taste what it's like, wanted to feel what it is like, experience what it's like to be a Krishna, to be a Lord. And what does a Lord mean? It means to be served, to be glorified, to be honored, to be looked up to. What does it taste like? This curiosity becomes an obsession. And when it becomes an obsession and one no longer wants to serve and wants to be served, one no longer wants to give pleasure but wants to get pleasure from the Supreme Lord, or wants to get pleasure from, like the Supreme Lord, I should say, then he's no longer qualified to live in this spiritual world. And he then has to be sent to another world where he can get the opportunity to lord it over a world or people or places or things. And in that way, he gets a taste of lordship. Everybody is getting a taste of lordship. Human beings get it in their interactions. A person may have lordship in his family life. Man may dominate his wife. Wife may dominate her husband. Both husband and wife can dominate the children. The children dominate their toys or their pets. You know, little Fido doesn't want to go the way he went. Hey, get over there. Get over there. You start to boss him around, and the dog barks at you. Shut up. And you feel, see my power. He shuts up. He's scared of me. So then the dog, being frustrated and upset, he goes running after the cat in the backyard. So, and the cat, she gets scared of the dog because the dog has a big bark and she's only got a little meow. So, therefore, she goes running away, but that's not all. She looks for the first rat she can find because she wants to lord it over also. So she goes running after the mice or the rats and it doesn't just kill it, but plays with it to reassure itself. Just see my power. You're wiggling around. You're scared. You're petrified. Look at you. And I'm going to keep you that way just to show how powerful I am. And then I'm going to kill you after I've tortured you for the next 50 minutes. This is the mentality of the cat. And then, of course, the mouse, he's running after all the cockroaches. And the cockroaches, they're running after the mites. And the mites are running after the bacteria. So everyone is running after somebody to prove his lordship. Everybody gets an opportunity. This is the world of lordship. You're never deprived or denied. But if you don't get that lordship, for example, the cat goes after the mouse, but the mouse escapes, well, the poor cat's frustrated. He's just gotten barked at, chased after by the dog, and now the poor cat, he doesn't feel any lordship. So he's got to go hunting here, there, and everywhere till he can see a mouse or maybe a smaller dog that he can scratch. So this is the material world. In this material world, of course, that's what it's all about. Human beings come together for the same purpose, but we have social etiquette, we have social customs, which enable us to work together in a smooth, harmonious fashion. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to smash you to bits. I still want to smash you because by smashing you, I get the opportunity to feel, or to, by dominating you, or by looking down at you, or putting you in a helpless position, I feel I'm more powerful than you. You have to ask me for things. You have to pray to me for things. You have to beg me, please, can I have this? Can I have a raise in salary? Can I have this better desk nearer to the window? Can I have all these different... And I'm feeling, well, I have the power to decide on whether he sits here or he goes here. And I feel so important. I feel so valuable. I feel so great. This is the madness. And if I somehow lose my job, then what happens? I'm not feeling like a lord. I'm going from one employment agency to another, to another, to another, and I'm jobless. No one to boss, no one to look at, look down at. No one to look up to me. So I'm frustrated. I'm angry. And when I'm angry, I have to take it out on somebody. So if I'm married, I shout at my wife or tell my kid to get out of my face. And then the kid throws something at me. Or he puts his roller skate near the door. When I come in, I slip on it and fall on my head. So it's a very, very difficult situation, this lordship. And the problem is that each and every person is trying his best to gain control over somebody or something else. And as long as we have this mentality, we will always be miserable. Because there are times when we can't obtain, we can't receive, we can't achieve what we're looking for. And we're frustrated, as I just mentioned. And this frustration, it just leads to more anxiety and uncertainty. And it colors our attitude, causing us to often look down at people, shout at people, get into fights with people. All of this, these fights, people shooting, domestic violence, all this is the result of the big false ego. It's like a balloon, you know, kind of attached, an invisible balloon. Try to think of it that way. And every time you get some adoration, you get some profit, you get distinction, you get glorification, you get surrender, you get submission, as Anytime we receive this, we feel bigger, better, greater, higher. We have something that gives us some meaning. False meaning, of course, but it's meaning. And that meaning that we get from that is very temporary. And because it's temporary, the result is that we become frustrated when we no longer can have it. And this is often taken out. It's often the problem is we often take it out on various persons whom we feel we want to blame, or we want to consider responsible, or we want to in some way feel some false sense of power. In other words, if you feel crushed and you want to deny that you're really crushed, that you're smashed, that you're low, that you're small, that you're inconsequential, how do you do that? By propping yourself up. And you prop yourself up by putting somebody down. So you have a false sense of supremacy or superiority. And that false sense of superiority, it leads to more and more miseries. And miseries lead to further miseries on a physical level, on a mental level, emotional level, intellectual, spiritual level. So the person is literally miserable. The problem is that everyone has forgotten the real purpose of life. They think that the purpose of life is to be a lord of all I survey. And what does that imply? To be an enjoyer, to be an owner, a proprietor, to be the friend of all. And how do we obtain all of that? We try to be beautiful and people look up to us. Or we try to be wealthy and everybody salutes us. Or we try to be strong and powerful, influential. And people are awed by us because we're in a higher economic position. Or we try to gain fame, become a movie star, become a rock star, become a sports star, become any type of a star that people will know, so that people will know our name. And when we hear our name, we feel great. The false ego gets bigger. That balloon is becoming like the that big blimp that you see hanging over those Super Bowls and all those different major bowls. What is the name of that? Goodyear? Yeah, the Goodyear blimp. So we have to think of the false ego like a big blimp. And then what happens is that finally, as we go older and older and become more and more decrepit, and we begin to lose our lordship, our power, our control, the blimp starts to slowly, slowly become smaller and smaller and smaller. And then at death, there's nothing left. The blimp is just flat, just a piece of rubber lying on the ground. Nothing. I'm nobody. For years and years, I've been thinking, I'm somebody, I'm important. Everybody's saluting me, glorifying me, adoring me, telling me how wonderful I am. And now I've got nothing, nothing to show for it at the time of death. And if I've been living a life which is very, very selfish, what happens is that I'm empty. If all the things that gave meaning and value and purpose to my life are no longer there, they've all been taken away, what do I have? I'm a big zero. So people are working and living and striving and struggling to become big zeros. That's a great goal, isn't it? A wonderful ambition to become zero. But we're thinking we're going to be infinitely large, big, powerful. So this is what Srila Prabhupada teaches us in these books. These temporary gains, these momentary inflations of our false ego, all they do is give us a false sense of security. And the only way to gain real security is we have to actually deflate the ego and increase the love of the heart for the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, and the great spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. To have veneration, not for my little iPod or my iPhone which I worship has become my new God, but instead to worship this glorious book, or all the glorious books of Prabhupada, to worship the great deities on our altar here, and also to venerate and respect the devotees who are serving the deities. What happens when we do that? Well, instead of building the big blimp, what happens is you contract the blimp. You destroy the blimp. And instead you build the heart, or what we call the spiritual body. The more that we strive to give, as we once did in the spiritual world, to give pleasure to the Supreme Lord, the more Krishna will respond. And when he responds, he injects, literally, the super soul and the soul are together. So he injects the soul with his love. And when that love is injected into the soul feels that love in the form of transcendental bliss, transcendental peace, transcendental strength, transcendental freedom. It doesn't feel bound like a materialist does. We've just bypassed New Year's and Christmas, and it brought back to my mind a very interesting aspect of a story called The Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. How many of you have ever read that or heard it? You must have read it in England. Charles Dickens was an English writer, so most of you are familiar with that story. Let me just recall something to you, because it's so apropos of what I'm talking about today. Many people think that death ends all. It's all over. So if life becomes too difficult, you just take a gun, shoot your head. Or if you've got illnesses and it's really aching you and paining you, then you take some pill or some potion to kill yourself, and it's all over. But that's not what A Christmas Carol says. The partner of Ebenezer Scrooge was known as Jacob Marley. Jacob Marley was just as stingy and greedy and selfish as Scrooge. They were a pair. They really got along well. So what happens is Marley died. And 7 years later, on Christmas Eve, he came as a spirit, as a ghost, to visit Scrooge. And Scrooge was a very cynical person. Bah, humbug. That was his. He couldn't stand Christmas. He couldn't stand people. He couldn't stand the holidays. He thought of it all as a means to take away his money. And his only goal was to fill those pockets bigger and bigger. So then Marley, when he came in, this is what fascinated me, because it was so it's so right out of our books. Marley was bound in a chain. He had chains around him. And the chains were forged in what? Well, he had a big money box. And inside, and also, there was a big padlock to lock the money box so nobody could put their hand in it and get that money. And there was also a ledger. That was part of the chain. There was also a ledger there, or an account book in which you keep your assets and liabilities. You keep your income, your expenses, profit and loss. That was his entire life. And he also had a purse where he would keep his money, where we have to buy things. So he was chained completely. And while he was talking to Scrooge, he was so depressed. He was so completely down, melancholy. And he had come to warn Scrooge that if you persist in the way of life that you have, not giving, not being charitable, not being kind, not being generous, not being thoughtful, compassionate, or any of these things, but you go on just thinking of yourself, you're going to end up like me. Scrooge became very, very frightened, very disturbed. As Marley was speaking, every few moments, he would shout out in great pain, "Ah! Ah! Ah!" Scrooge said, "What's wrong? What's happening?" He says, "I'm just miserable. I'm so miserable."
but you're in the spirit body now. It doesn't matter. All the miseries that I had in the material world are now within me today, and they have not left me.
The living entity in this material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to the next, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. So he carries these conceptions. He carries his guilt. He carries his uncertainty. He carries his sins. And the result of that is that the misery persisted right into the spirit world. And what did Marley do? She said, what have you been doing in the 7 years? He says, I've been just traveling around, just going here and there, virtually nowhere, just miserable. So we all have the opportunity to be free of that kind of a condition and to help others become free of that condition, because so many are going to end up in that situation. When you have no spiritual merits or no spiritual association, communion, contact with the Supreme Lord, the result is that you're empty. A car can't run on empty, and a soul can't run on empty. If the soul tries to run on empty, it's just weighed down in misery. But when the soul is infilled with the love of Krishna as a result of performing pure devotional loving service, then the soul, like a lotus in the sunshine, it blossoms out. It comes open, and it gives off a fragrance. And similarly, a devotee who is dedicated and devoted to performing loving service to the Lord in any one of the nine forms, such as hearing, hearing the name of the Lord, chanting His name, remembering Krishna, serving His lotus feet, worshiping Him, offering prayers to Him, practical service to the Lord, friendly association with Krishna, and ultimately, to surrender one's body, one's mind, and one's speech to Krishna. When one does that, Krishna is pleased, and he fills the soul with inner peace. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is the perfect mystic. He's liberated in the Supreme Lord, and ultimately he attains the Supreme Lord. So the devotee becomes rich within. He may be poor without, or he may be wealthy without, but it doesn't matter to him, because he depends upon Krishna for his happiness. He doesn't depend upon externals. Whatever externals he needs, such as food and clothing and shelter, and maybe medical attention or dental attention, or anything he may need for his service, he depends upon Krishna, and Krishna takes care of him, making sure that he gets what he needs. He takes care of his health. He takes care of his strength. He takes care of all the things that he will need. Sometimes the Lord gives the devotee difficulties, but that's for his purification. Otherwise, he would not develop the virtue of compassion. When a devotee suffers, it's different than an ordinary person suffering. Ordinary person suffers a million times more because he's being cut off from the only thing that gives his life meaning, sense pleasure. He got no sense pleasure. But even while a devotee is in some pain or suffering, he can still depend upon Krishna. He can still chant the holy name. He can still beg for Krishna's mercy, that he can develop more love or some love for Krishna. So the devotee actually can be blissful even while he may even be in a painful state. But not so the non-devotee. So the devotee should never think that if he doesn't have some material opulence or material luxuries, that he's somehow being cheated by Krishna. As soon as the devotee completely, totally surrenders, as Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So Krishna rewards that surrender. And what is he rewarded with? Little by little, more and more of himself. He gives himself to his devotee. And the devotee feels that presence. And so he's never really alone. Not only that, but when he associates with other devotees, he feels the presence of God in them. So his bliss is quadrupled, tripled, over and over again. That's why it's so wonderful to be amongst devotees who are genuinely surrendering to Krishna. So, therefore, a devotee learns to transcend all of this business of lording it over. Of course, there are temptations, even when a devotee may get into some opulent position. He may be a manager. He may be in charge of something. He may have people under him. Even then, he has to realize he's only an instrument of Krishna's love. And so he has to always beg Krishna, please, you speak through me. Help me to, in some way, say to these persons whatever needs to be said in a way that you yourself would say it, so that they will respond and continue in their devotional life, devotional service. Because sometimes one wrong word can throw a person completely in a tipsy, and he may want to leave devotional service. I've seen this. So it's very important that when we interact with each other, that we speak sweetly and lovingly and kindly and responsibly, thoughtfully. That way, the very best comes out of each other. You give something beautiful, you get something beautiful. This is what really devotion, how devotional life becomes more and more beautiful. Of course, we're all growing, we're all developing, and we all can't be perfect. So even if somebody doesn't speak beautifully to me or to you or to anyone, we have to be tolerant. We have to be patient. We need to be understanding that he's growing just as I am. Sometimes I'm angry. Sometimes he's being angry. So we tolerate. We learn patience. We learn understanding. And instead of saying, feeling vengeful, when we see the person again, we ask, are you feeling better now? Are you okay? So instead of the person thinking that you're going to attack him, he actually sees that you're above being upset or disturbed. The only way we cannot be disturbed or shaken or upset is if we are inwardly peaceful, inwardly free, inwardly strong. Work then as a sacrifice to Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction. And that way you'll be free from all bondage. And Krishna says, always depend upon me. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So Krishna says, listen to me. Follow my injunctions. Don't forget me. Use different means to remember me. Write my name on your wrist. Write my name near where your tilak is. Write my name wherever you're going to be, your locker. You open the locker, you see Krishna's name. See Krishna's pictures all over. Not just as a decoration at all. As a reminder that if we don't have this service mentality, loving service, dedicated service, devoted service, surrendered service, then we can lose the path of spiritual life. We should not think that we've got it locked up tight. I've seen so many sannyasis, so many gurus, so many big presidents. They're no longer here. They're out violating all four regulative principles and justifying it, no less. As if this is perfectly good behavior. As if the religious principles of the Vedas are old hat. It just doesn't apply to this day and age. So we have this great opportunity, and we need to cherish it. We need to treasure it the way a miser treasures his gold. He holds it close to his heart. He goes to sleep and puts his gold under his pillow. And when he wakes up, he has to go to pass water in the night. He looks at he picks up the pillow and looks. Yes, the gold is still there. He cherishes it. He covets it. He loves it. We need to love our service, and we need to love other devotees' service in the same way. And that way, we'll all be blissful, all happy, all peaceful, all strong, and we will not have to struggle to gain the false acquirements of beauty and wealth and strength and fame, material knowledge, false detachment. We won't have to go for those because we've got something within. And if we've got something within, then whatever we get from without is like a feather in the cap. It's just extra. We don't depend on it. We don't need it. We have Krishna. We have his devotees. We have these wonderful books written by Krishna's pure devotees. And we have the means and the way to become transcendental to everything material and base and lowly. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Are there any questions or comments that anybody would like to ask? Everybody agrees? Really? Okay, then you're all dismissed. Thank you so much for Hare Krishna.